And now, Virgin Most Powerful Radio is pleased to present Hands-On Apologetics with renowned Catholic author and apologist, Gary Matuta.
And welcome, everyone. Yes, you have entered into the Apologetic Zone, Virgin Most Powerful's Apologetics Dojo. I'm your guest. Well, I wouldn't say guest host. I am your host and sensei today. Actually, I'm also the guest host and guest sensei because I'm going to be doing the program. Well, we're not going to have a guest today, but rather we are going to jump into one of my all-time favorite topics, all about Mary. And so we're going to talk about how Mary fits into God's plan. You know, for many non-Catholics, Marian doctrine, Catholic doctrine, not only seems to be unscriptural, but in some ways even anti-scriptural. And above all, it seems as if all this Catholic doctrine about the Immaculate Conception, the Assumption, and so on, is an addition to the final and finished work of Christ, that it's an unnecessary add-on. How would you explain why Mary is necessary, why Mary is important, why she doesn't compete with Christ? And also, by the way, with us Catholics, we also sometimes have a little trouble figuring out, well, why is it that the Church singles out certain Marian teachings? I mean, like the Immaculate Conception or the Assumption or the Annunciation, why are these things important in terms of the gospel? Well, that's what we're going to talk about after the first break. We're going to look at how the early church fathers understood Mary, and this is one of my all-time favorite talks. It's helpful for non-Catholics. It's helpful for Catholics. So if you know anyone that's struggling with Marian doctrine and would just like an overview of how it all fits together, call them up. Text them. Tell them, hey, you got to listen to this show, or at least, you know, send them a link to this program, Hands-On Apologetics. And I think that they will enjoy the program. By the way, you can also access all the programs on Virgin Most Powerful, not just Hands-On Apologetics, at the virginmostpowerfulradio.org website. It has all those wonderful broadcasts available for you. At a click of a button, just go to Shows. Click down on your favorite show and scroll down to the topics. And by the way, it also gives you an opportunity to share, to download, things like that. Check it out. Lots of cool features. And by the way, I mean, it's also helpful to kind of spread the word around. Keep us in your prayers and spread the word about us. And it's time for us to give our shout out to those watching live stream on social media with Facebook and YouTube. Hello, everybody. Good to see everybody. Wow, look at the emojis shooting out of the screen. For those listening on radio, I have a live feed of the chat room on YouTube in front of me. And I have a question for you guys on YouTube. Do you save up those emojis and then like unleash them when the show starts? Or is this all like a free-for-all? You're just hunt and peck. I get a emoji with a thumbs up, so I guess I don't know which of those two options are. But anyway, it's great to have you with us watching live stream. Yes, we do. All right. And it's also great for those listening on radio. So thank you for joining the program. As always, we have our exercises for today. You know, I hate calling it exercises because, you know, who wants to exercise? No one's like, hey, let's do some exercises. We got to think of a better name. But it's ways in which we sharpen our ability to explain, defend the faith, sharpen our critical thinking skills. We have the finding the fallacy, and the finding the fallacy for today is the furtive fallacy. And also the meet the early church father for today is Arnobius of Sicca. Not exactly a household name, but we'll learn a little bit about him in a few seconds. And as always, you're part of the program. If you want, you give us a call at 888-526-2151. That's 888-526-2151. And you can also email your questions at questions@handsonapologetics.com. And that is the that's the email that goes straight to me. So if you ever have a question or so on, go to questions at hands-on-apologetics.com. It flies through the internet and lands in the dojo mailbox. And I do respond to all the emails I get. But however, you know, it's funny. Last week, I was actually out in California at the world headquarters of Virgin Most Powerful. Got to meet all the great gang that's behind the scenes and also in front of the cameras and so on. And had a great time. But I was keeping up on all the work. And then there was this giant windstorm that went through the Midwest on Sunday when I was supposed to fly back. And basically, here in the Detroit area, the flights were canceled. So I had to push my departure date back one day. And ladies and gentlemen, I tell you, that one day has backlogged me. I'm still trying to dig my way out. Now, why am I saying this? Well, because I know some of you have sent questions to the Dojo mailbox. I haven't responded. So thank you for your patience. I do respond, just not very quickly. Let's put it that way. But like I said, questions at hands-on-apologetics.com. I love hearing from you. I got some great stuff, by the way, in the mailbox. We'll see if we have some time maybe in the program. I could go through some of them. But let's jump into our finding the fallacy for today, which is the furtive fallacy. The furtive fallacy is an informal fallacy of emphasis in which the outcomes are asserted to have been caused by some hidden misconduct or wrongdoing by decision makers. So that's the furtive fallacy. In other words, it kind of asserts that a particular outcome came about not based on evidence per se, but some sort of hidden motive, some hidden misconduct, some wrongdoings of all the movers and shakers behind the scene. And, of course, this is kind of akin to a conspiracy theory, right? Because how in the world could you prove something like that? I mean, the whole idea of hidden misconduct is that it's hidden, right? So how can you provide evidence of hidden misconduct or wrongdoing? And by the way, this is also one of those fallacies that when it comes to Catholic apologetics, it's very common that many times the people will assert that certain things happen in the church. Why? Because priests are mean and they don't want people to be happy. And so they make up these doctrines or, you know, things like that. It's funny how you run into the furtive fallacy a lot. And basically, you need to call them out and say, look, okay, show me proof of that, okay? And even if it's true, even if you concede it, say, okay, fine. Let's say somebody did have some sort of grudge or axe to grind or, you know, there was some sort of wrongdoing. You still got to show whether the thing is true and good or not true and good, you know? It doesn't get you off the hook by spinning some sort of conspiracy theory web to try to explain its origins. So that's our finding the fallacy for today, the furtive fallacy. And let's jump to the meet the early church father. And like I said, the early church father today is Arnobius of Sicca. Like I said, not a household name, but nevertheless, this person wrote a lot. He has quite a bit of writings in terms of volume. Not so many works as much as just really long writings. Arnobius of Sicca is also known as Arnobius the Elder. He was born a pagan, and after many years of vigorous opposition to Christianity, he was warned in his dreams to convert to the faith. So he has this, you know, this kind of dream that changes his life. He converts to Christianity, and as a teacher of rhetoric in Sicca in Africa, he also had as a pupil another early church father named Lactantius. If you recall, last segment, we talked about Lactantius. So he was a pupil of Arnobius. Well, anyway, according to St. Jerome's account, the people in Africa were very skeptical about Arnobius' sincerity when he sought to be baptized after this dream. Because after all, he had been a loyal and a persistent opponent of Christianity in the area. And so when he sought baptism, the bishop demanded proof of his sincerity. So, in proof of his sincerity, it was ordered that Arnobius came up with this idea that he's going to write a book, or actually several books, in which he's going to express a defense of the faith. So he wrote seven books that apparently constitute the sole literary endeavor of this person in a treatise called Against the Pagans. It presented a defense of Christianity against numerous false charges of its adversaries. It was written roughly around the year 305 AD. The work has, to be kind, it's not one of the greatest works in Christian history, but it was written hastily by a man who basically didn't really have a great grasp of Christian theology. Nevertheless, it does have a lot of value in that Arnobius's writings on against the pagans is a very good source of information about pagan cults around the time of the early church fathers, around 305. So although, you know, in terms of his exponential, or what I want to say, his, his grasp of theology and his theological arguments, it's not that great of a work, but because it was written around this time and he certainly knew paganism like the back of his hand, the work's actually a pretty good resource if you want to find out what pagan beliefs were around that time. So that is our early church father for today. It is Arnobius of Sicca, who, like I said, he wrote roughly about 305 AD. He died roughly AD 327. So early church father, maybe a contemporary or early contemporary of Augustine and St. Jerome, and, of course, Lactantius and others. All right, gang. Well, that's the early church fathers. On the other side of the break, we're going to talk about Mary and making sense of Mary. And we're going to talk about how Marian teaching, Marian doctrine, fits into God's perfect plan of redemption. You don't want to miss it. Good stuff. Stay tuned.
This is Terry Barber inviting you, all the men, to a men's conference June 15th at the Sacred Heart Chapel. This is going to be a day where we're going to talk about true masculinity. You know, there's a problem in the Catholic Church today. We have very few men who love the Catholic faith. And I know a lot of the wives that I'm listening to right now are saying, I want my husband to be on fire for the faith. Send him to the men's conference. Your son, send him to the men's conference by going to virginmostpowerfulradio.org or call 877-526-2151. That's June 15th. When your husband comes back from this conference or your son, they're going to have a different view about their Catholic faith because they're going to meet three men who love Jesus and his bride, the church, and are going to instill in them a love for Christ and his church, the Eucharist, Our Lady. Bring them to virginmostpowerfulradio.org. Sign up there or call 877-526-2151. Full sheen ahead.
It is only because of your continued prayers and generous donations that Virgin Most Powerful Radio can broadcast live each weekday. We count on your spiritual and financial support because you understand the urgent need for Catholic programming that shares the gospel with clarity and charity, but without compromise. Please prayerfully consider becoming a monthly donor. You can set it up with the touch of a button on our website, CatholicRC.org.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
Now, back to Hands-On Apologetics with Gary Matuta. If you'd like to join the conversation, call 888-526-2151. Here's Gary.
Welcome back, everybody. Hands-On Apologetics. And I was just looking at the chat room, and someone asked, what is the dojo mailbox? Dojo mailboxes, questions at handsonapologetics.com. That's where you send questions, comments. Maybe you have situations you're in that you'd like to share and, you know, bounce things off the wall. We'd love to hear from you. So it's questions at handsonapologetics.com. My apologies. I tried to type it into the chat room, but apparently you're not allowed to do that. So I got slapped on my virtual wrist. But anyway, let's jump to Mary, shall we? Now, what I'm going to share with you, if you want all the details, all the scripture, all the early church fathers quotes, I'm getting this from my book, Making Sense of Mary. So those who can see on live stream, that's Making Sense of Mary. It's also available, by the way, on GaryMachuta.com, which is the Catholic Productions website. I did a four or five CD set on Mary, just wall-to-wall Mary stuff, and it's also on there, too. So let's talk about Mary. You know, Mary is quite contrary to non-Catholics, which is kind of strange for us Catholics because we love the Virgin Mother. We love her feast. We celebrate her feast. But for non-Catholics, Mary doesn't make sense. Mary doesn't seem to fit in. It seems like we make an awful lot of a person who is mentioned very few times in Scripture. So non-Catholics have that difficulty. And they also see it as, in some ways, detracting from the glory due to God. Because, after all, Jesus is our Redeemer. And to insist that Mary has some sort of special graces or prerogatives seems to detract our attention or take our attention away from God, from Jesus. So that's, in a nutshell, some of the difficulties that our non-Catholic separated brethren have. But, you know, the truth is for us Catholics, too, we have a tough time explaining Marian doctrine in a way that fully integrates it with the gospel. I mean, I know I mentioned this on my talks that I know for myself, you know, I believe and I love the Feast of the Immaculate Conception, the Assumption, you know, Mary's Mother of God, and all the feasts, all the doctrines. But to me, it seemed like these didn't really integrate with God's perfect plan of redemption, that in some ways Marian teaching is, if you picture like the old Mr. Potato Head, I don't even know if they still make that thing, but you know, you have the potato, which is the gospel, the core message of the gospel, and then the Marian stuff's like these things that are added to it. They're kind of superfluous, right? And I know that a lot of Catholics kind of have that. They don't really have an integrating vision of exactly why Mary is important, why these doctrines are important, and how they fit in with God's plan of redemption. So I began to study. Okay, now one of the first things I learned in apologetics is Mary as New Eve. Okay, and many of you may be familiar with the story of Mary as New Eve, because Eve, there's a series of parallels. Eve was sinless, Mary was sinless. Eve was approached by a fallen angel. Mary is approached by a glorious angel. Eve believed a lie. Mary believed the truth. Eve gave the fruit to Adam and gave birth to death. Mary believed the gospel and gave birth to Jesus, who is life. Okay, and that's basically how it runs. At least it does today. And I remember learning that the first time, and I thought, wow, that's really cool. But that's about it. You know, it's an interesting factoid. In fact, whenever I used Mary as New Eve with non-Catholics, you know, they were thought, oh, that's kind of neat. But they never really gave it much weight like me, because it just seems like a bunch of parallels. And for non-Catholics, it seems like what's known as typology. And typology is where something in the Old Testament foreshadows something that is fulfilled in the New. And by and large, our separated brethren, they are uncomfortable with typology. Now, for me as an apologist, I didn't really think it was a very good argument either. It seemed like, to me, the Mary as New Eve sounded a lot like, and maybe you've heard about this parallelism between President Lincoln and President Kennedy. You guys ever seen that? I'll look at the forum. You guys ever saw those parallels? Yeah, we're, you know, they're both born on dates. You know, there's similarity in dates. There's Kennedy's assassin shot him from a warehouse and hid in a theater. Wait, shot him in a theater, hidden in a warehouse. Kennedy's assassination, shot him from a warehouse, hidden in a theater. They both had secretaries of a similar name, vice presidents, all these different parallels. But when push comes to shove, what does it prove? Wait, that Kennedy's a new Lincoln? You know, it doesn't really prove anything. It's just kind of interesting that there's these parallels. And by the way, there's even more dissimilarities than there are similarities between the two. But the same thing is true with Mary's New Eve. When I heard it, I thought, it doesn't really prove anything. You know, it's just interesting parallels. Well, when I began to study the early church fathers, and this happened over a number of years, what I realized was that the early church had a much more robust understanding of Mary's New Eve. In fact, it's almost like night and day. And that the early church, when how they viewed Mary's New Eve, actually helped clarify those questions that I asked earlier. How does Marian doctrine integrate with the gospel? You know, how is it that we can acknowledge these Marian doctrines and yet not detract from the glory due to God or the sufficiency of Christ's sacrifice? So what I want to do in this program is I want to walk through with you how the early church viewed Mary as New Eve. And so God willing, we'll be able to do that. So keep me in your prayers. First thing that the early church fathers did. Now, this is interesting. We talked a little bit about it with John Martinoni yesterday. The early Christian church was not a New Testament church. It was an Old Testament church. The scriptures, by and large, were the Old Testament scriptures. The New Testament was being written and collated and so on. And so it's not unusual that especially the earliest church fathers quoted from the Old Testament, including the New Testament. That's where they went. When they wanted to understand something about what Christ did or taught, they went to the Old Testament. Okay. Now, when the question came up about redemption, how are we to understand Christ's redemption of the world? How are we to understand about God's saving plan for redemption? They didn't go to the pages of the New Testament per se. They went to the Old Testament. And if you want to learn about the redemption, you need to learn about the fall. In fact, the more you understand about the fall, the more light it shines upon what we're redeemed from, right? Because after all, how do you know what we're redeemed from unless you know what the original thing from which we are redeemed? So they went to the Old Testament and they focused on Adam and Eve. Okay, or Adam and the woman, actually. Now, I know all of you are familiar with this story. I'm not going to go through it in detail. But if you think about it, what was God's original plan? Like, if everything worked out perfect with Adam and the woman, how would the world look like today? You ever think about that? Well, I mean, let's look at some of the steps. This is kind of like, this is my own personal view of how it worked out. And I think it's pretty well-grounded. First, God brings into being an immaculate, sinless Adam, okay? And by the way, also an immaculate, sinless Eve, or woman. And he says that it's not good for a man to, or excuse me, he brings about Adam, and he says it's not good for man to be alone, okay? Which is kind of interesting, because if you look through Genesis, every day, God says, it is good, it is good, it is good. He creates man, it is very good. But there is one time where he says something is not good. And that's Genesis 2:18, where he says it's not good for man to be alone. So he brings about an immaculate, sinless woman to be his helpmate. Okay, so you have a sinless Adam, a sinless woman, his helpmate, right? And by the way, I don't know if you know this, but Adam and the woman are in glory. They're crowned. They're royal figures. If you don't believe me, look at Psalm 8, verse 5 and 6, or 1 Corinthians 11, 7. Adam is crowned with glory. Okay. And since woman is the image of man, she's crowned too. Right. So they're crowned. They're royal. And they're given dominion over the earth. They're given rulership over the earth in Genesis 1. Verse 28. How are they going to have dominion over the earth? God says, be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth and subdue it. And it has language of ruling, of dominion. Okay, so not only do they look like king and queen, but they have this authority, this dominion. How? They're going to rule through their offspring. Okay, so now remember, if they hadn't sinned, we can assume that their offspring are born righteous, that they aren't born with original sin. And so they do God's will. And so by Adam and Eve having children, they spread over the earth, have dominion over the earth. Why? So that God's will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Okay? That seems to be God's original plan. And also, by the way, if they hadn't sinned, there's good reason to believe that they would be living forever. They would be living forever in paradise, in Eden. And reigning in Eden, which is kind of interesting. So if you think about the original perfect plan before the fall, if everything went right, that's kind of the picture. Today, Adam and Eve would be alive. Everyone on earth would be righteous. God's will would be done on earth as is in heaven, right? And Adam and Eve would be in glory, okay, in paradise. Well, that's how it could have been, but that's not how it was, okay? Because there is a problem in Eden, and the problem is the serpent, okay? So once you turn to chapter 3 of Genesis, we find out something very foreboding, and that is that there is a serpent who is going to approach the woman. And by the way, why? What is his goal? What is his plan? Well, we know from the back of the Bible that the serpent is the devil, right? He's the ancient serpent. And what he wants to do is he wants to tear down what God has just constructed, this beautiful, perfect creation, okay? We know through, for example, I know non-Catholics don't accept this, but we know through the Book of Wisdom that it's through envy that the devil, that death entered the world, that the devil wants to tear down what God has accomplished. And how is he going to do that? How can he tear down this beautiful structure that God seems to have intended? Well, that's what we're going to find out on the other side of the break. So what we're going to do is we're going to look at the fall through the eyes of the early church fathers and the New Testament. And what we're going to see is how the serpent goes about destroying God's, what seems to be God's original idea, God's original plan. And through that, we will learn about the redemption, and we'll learn about Mary's role in that redemption. So stay tuned, everybody. You don't want to miss it. You listen to Hands On Apologetics. I'm Gary Machuto. Stay tuned.
This is Terry Barber inviting you, all the men, to a men's conference June 15th at the Sacred Heart Chapel. This is going to be a day where we're going to talk about true masculinity. You know, there's a problem in the Catholic Church today. We have very few men who love the Catholic faith. And I know a lot of the wives that I'm listening to right now are saying, I want my husband to be on fire for the faith. Send him to the men's conference. Your son, send him to the men's conference by going to virginmostpowerfulradio.org or call 877-526-2151. That's June 15th. When your husband comes back from this conference or your son, they're going to have a different view about their Catholic faith because they're going to meet three men who love Jesus and his bride, the church, and are going to instill in them a love for Christ and his church, the Eucharist, Our Lady. Bring them to virginmostpowerfulradio.org. Sign up there or call 877-526-2151. Full sheen ahead.
It is only because of your continued prayers and generous donations that Virgin Most Powerful Radio can broadcast live each weekday. We count on your spiritual and financial support because you understand the urgent need for Catholic programming that shares the gospel with clarity and charity, but without compromise. Please prayerfully consider becoming a monthly donor. You can set it up with the touch of a button on our website, CatholicRC.org.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber.
Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
This is Jesse Romero. You're listening to Hands-On Apologetics with Gary Machuda on Virgin Most Powerful Radio.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. We're talking about Mary and making sense of Mary. And we had just set up God's original plan for the fall. And like I said, by focusing on what goes on in the fall and understanding that, we have a clear understanding of the redemption. And everything would turn out very good. You know, the Adam and Eve would live forever in Eden, apparently. They would never die. God's dominion would spread through righteous children of Adam and Eve around the world. It's a glorious scene that they're crowned and they're in glory. But then in chapter 3, the serpent approaches. And he approaches the sinless betrothed virgin, the woman. And by the way, if you don't believe that she's betrothed, you could check it out in 2 Corinthians 11, 2 through 3. And what happens next is interesting, because the goal for the serpent is Adam. Okay, he knows that Adam is the root of humanity. And so if he's able to have the woman sin, God could repair that very easily. He could have her repent, or he could put Adam to sleep and make another Eve and, send the other one into exile. There's lots of different ways he could repair it. But he can't repair Adam, because Adam is the root of humanity. He's from which all humanity at this point, he and the woman, exist, right? So the goal is Adam, but he approaches the woman. And the reason for that is because he sees an advantage. And the advantage is that it's not good for man to be alone. And so the early church fathers saw that as basically the devil kind of puts Adam into a predicament where either he follows the law of God and not eat of the fruit, or he follows his helpmate. And since it's not good for him to be alone, there's extra impetus to follow the helpmate. So the devil needs to first go after the woman and then through the woman to Adam. Now, how does he do this? Well, he does it through a series of steps. In each step of the way, he has to be successful or the plan is kiboshed. It doesn't work. Okay. For example, first he has to approach the woman. Okay. If he can't approach the woman, it fails, right? Obviously. Next, the serpent tells the lie. He needs to deceive Eve. In 2 Corinthians 11, 2 and 3 says, the serpent deceived Eve by his craftiness, and her mind was led astray from the simplicity and purity of devotion to her husband and to God. Now, if she just heard a lie but she didn't believe it, game's over, right? So she has to believe the lie. That's the next step in the plan. And indeed, the woman does. And actually, St. Irenaeus of Lyon has an interesting comment about that. He says, the woman, having heard the command from Adam, treated it with contempt, either because she deemed it unworthy of God to speak by means of it, or because she had her doubts, perhaps even held the opinion that the command was given to her by Adam of his own accord. In other words, you can see where faith has something to do with this, Who's she going to believe, the serpent, or is she going to believe the command of God that was given to her through Adam? Remember, God did not repeat the command not to eat of the fruit. He only says it once in Genesis. So the only way the woman knew of the command was through her husband, Adam. Okay, so she had to believe the lie. If she didn't believe the lie, again, buzz, game over, right? But she does believe the lie. Now, what happens by believing the lie, the woman changes alliances. She moves from being in friendship with God to being at enmity with God. Okay? And she moves from being at enmity with the serpent to being friends with the serpent. You can't be both. You can't be friends of God and the friends of the devil. It's one or the other. So she changes that alliance. Okay? And she does it by being deceived. In 1 Timothy 2:14, for example, it says, "And it was not Adam who was deceived, but the woman, being deceived, fell into transgression." And also in, they're in the early church, fathers also saw that. The woman was deceived by simulated friendship. And therefore, in a sense, she was made an enemy of God. Okay. So she believes the lie. The next step is she changes alliances. Okay. And next step is very important. If it stopped there, then you would just have a sinful woman, but the root of humanity would still remain in God's fellowship, right? So there's more to this story. The woman has to cooperate with the serpent, and he actually is used as his instrument. Remember, the whole idea is to approach Adam through the woman. So she becomes a cooperator in the serpent's plan. For example, and this is the book of Sirach, it's a Deuterocanonical book, but nevertheless, if you don't accept it, if you're Protestant, it does show early Jewish thinking. It says, "In woman was sin's beginning, and because of her we all die." Now, he's not saying that she's the origin of original sin. He's not saying that, but what he's saying is, it's because of her sin that she lays the circumstances in which Adam falls, okay? She becomes his, in a sense, his instrument, okay? So one of the early church fathers, I don't see the name here, I believe it might be Augustine, I could be wrong, says this about the devil. "Does he not ask repeatedly, 'How does it happen that the instrument which aided me in the beginning is now my enemy?' Woman," listen to this, "woman cooperated with me to obtain tyrannical power over the human race." In other words, it's through a cooperation she becomes the instrument of the devil. She becomes the means that provides the circumstances for Adam's fall. In other words, she becomes the co-sinner. Okay, Adam is the sinner. It is his fall that causes us to lose sanctifying grace, to be born in original sin. It's through his sin alone the fall is accomplished. So we could call Adam the sinner. If you want a fancy Latin word, it's the peccator, okay? But the woman provided the circumstances for that fall, and in Latin we would call her the co-peccatrix, okay? Co doesn't mean equal, by the way. Co just means with in Latin. So each step, he approaches the virgin, he says the lie, she believes the lie, she changes alliances, she becomes his instrument, cooperates with his plan from beginning to end, gives the fruit to Adam, Adam partakes the fruit, the fall is accomplished. Okay. Now, if one of those steps were missing, the whole plan, the devil's plan, is destroyed. Okay, it doesn't work. Now, what's interesting is after Adam takes part of the fruit, there are consequences to his actions. For example, God curses the serpent in Genesis 3, 14 and 15. He also curses Adam and Eve. It's interesting, the curse. Adam came from the dust of the earth, so he has to labor for a fruit from the earth. Okay? And he's also going to return to the earth. He loses his immortality. The woman also will give labor, okay, or at least increase labor pains, when she gives forth the fruit of her womb. So that's the first the first results or effects of the fall. The second one is, of course, like I just said, they both lose immortality. If they were to partake of the tree of life, they'd live forever. And since they can't, they won't. Okay, so now they die. And next, they're exiled from paradise. So Adam actually is explicitly exiled in Genesis 3, 23, 24. And we learn in Genesis 4, the woman is with them. They're both exiled from paradise. Adam and the woman lose their first original innocence and glory. They are no longer glorious. They're no longer innocent. And Adam, by the way, renames his helpmate from woman to Eve, which means the mother of all the living. very interesting. Kind of ironic because although she is the mother physically of humanity, she's not the mother spiritually, because we're all born spiritually dead, in a sense, in original sin. And also, what about that dominion aspect? Remember, they were commanded to be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth and subdue it and have dominion? Well, guess what? Now, this is probably the worst part of the fall. Now, their children are going to be unrighteous. They're going to be in a state of original sin. They're going to be more inclined, or like Ephesians 2:3 says, we're born children of wrath, where it's easy for us to do the devil's will than God's because of our fallen nature. Now, through the offspring of Adam and Eve, the dominion of the devil spreads over the world. And you can see this in John 12:31. Jesus calls the devil the ruler of this world. In the temptation in the desert, you know, the devil shows him all the kingdoms of the earth, and he says he'll give them to Jesus. And Jesus doesn't say, no, you don't have dominion. No, he kind of assumes, okay, fine. So that's the catastrophic effects of the fall. All these things happen. Why? Because of Adam's sin. The sinner, the peccator, sinned. And that was set up by the co-sinner, the co-peccatrix, the woman. Okay. So how is God going to redeem us from this fall? How is God going to change this? How is he going to take each of these little victories and turn them into, of the devil, and turn them into victories of his own? How is he going to do that? Well, I think if you hold on to three basic principles, you'll find that there's a glorious way in which he does it. Okay, and those three basic principles is that God's redemption will be perfect, sufficient, totally complete to repair the fall. I think everybody can agree with that. That the devil will be justly punished. That was also a great victory. And also that the signs of disgrace will be reversed to signs of triumph. If God can do those things, then our redemption is most perfectly fulfilled in Christ. Okay? Now, like I said, Catholics and Protestants, I think, can affirm all three of those. God's plan of redemption is perfect, complete, lacking in nothing. The devil's punishment is perfect, complete, lacking in nothing, and that there's going to be a change in dominion, okay? Now, how does God do that? That is the question. Well, now that I have you on a cliffhanger, we're coming up to the break. When we come on the other side of the break, God willing, I'll be able to explain exactly how God does this and why, if you don't hold on to Marian doctrine, in a sense, it kind of implies that God's plan of redemption wasn't perfect. So stay tuned, everybody. Talking more about Mary on the other side of the break. Listen to Hands-On Apologetics. Stay tuned.
This is Terry Barber inviting you, all the men, to a men's conference June 15th at the Sacred Heart Chapel. This is going to be a day where we're going to talk about true masculinity. You know, there's a problem in the Catholic Church today. We have very few men who love the Catholic faith. And I know a lot of the wives that I'm listening to right now are saying, I want my husband to be on fire for the faith. Send him to the men's conference. Your son, send him to the men's conference by going to virginmostpowerfulradio.org or call 877-526-2151. That's June 15th. When your husband comes back from this conference or your son, they're going to have a different view about their Catholic faith because they're going to meet three men who love Jesus and his bride, the church, and are going to instill in them a love for Christ and his church, the Eucharist, Our Lady. Bring them to virginmostpowerfulradio.org. Sign up there or call 877-526-2151. Full sheen ahead.
It is only because of your continued prayers and generous donations that Virgin Most Powerful Radio can broadcast live each weekday. We count on your spiritual and financial support because you understand the urgent need for Catholic programming that shares the gospel with clarity and charity, but without compromise. please prayerfully consider becoming a monthly donor. You can set it up with the touch of a button on our website, CatholicRC.org.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber.
Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
Now, back to Hands-On Apologetics with Gary Machuda. If you'd like to join the conversation, call 888-526-2151. Here's Gary.
And welcome, everybody. For those who are just tuning in, we are talking about Mary and how she fits in with God's perfect plan of redemption. And so far, we've gone through the fall and how the devil had to accomplish certain victories, a whole string of victories, in fact, in order to bring down humanity. He had to approach the woman. He had to tell her the lie. She had to believe the lie. She had to change alliances. She had to cooperate with the serpent by handing the fruit to Adam, so she becomes its instrument. And Adam had to eat the fruit in order to fall. And then we talked about all the consequences of the fall. They lose glory. They have to labor to bring forth fruit from the earth. They're exiled from paradise. They lose their original innocence. The woman's name is changed to Eve. And how the devil gains dominion over the world through their fallen children. And we asked the question before the break, well, how in the world is God going to most perfectly and completely redeem us from this string of victories with the fall? Okay, so I like to use a football analogy, if I will, because, it's kind of, I think it's a good illustration of this question. Let's say I have a good friend. We both are fans of football, each have a different team, and we're always ribbing each other, saying, my team's better than yours, okay? Well, we really don't know until, let's say, the championship game, both our teams are playing against each other, okay? Then we can finally find out who has the best team. And the game is scoreless. Let's say through the whole game, no one scored. It's going back and forth. And then finally, on the last minute of play, my team's on their one-yard line, and we call our favorite play. The quarterback goes back to throw the pass. He throws it into the end zone. And guess what? The worst player on the other team catches the ball in the end zone and just starts running. And all our players, we can't catch him. He just eludes everybody on the team. He runs over 100 yards. He scores the touchdown and wins. Well, what's my friend going to do? Well, he's going to pick on me, right? He's going to say, okay, well, you played a good game, but we know who has the better team. Why? Well, he's going to go through each one of those steps. You were on the one-yard line, 1 minute to go, threw it to your best play. Our worst player intercepted the pass and ran all the way to score a touchdown. And he's going to do that every day of the year, right, to rub it in. Well, now let me ask you a question. How can my team most perfectly redeem themselves from this loss? How can they take away completely and totally that victory? Well, you might think, okay, another championship game with the same two teams, and maybe my team blows them off the field. Let's say we score 128 points to nothing. Every time we touch the football, we score. Would that do it? Well, we would be champions, true. But what could my friend do? He could say, congratulations, you're the champion, but we had an off day. Why? We know which team's better. Why? Because it was the last minute to play. You were on the one-yard line. You threw your favorite play. And my worst player, he intercepted the pass and ran all the way down, right? So, congratulations, you won the championship, but we really know who's the better team. Okay, so blowing them off the field with scoring isn't going to do it. How can my team most perfectly and completely redeem themselves so that my friend would have nothing to say in response? Well, what has to happen is there has to be another game, a championship game, but this time he's on my one-yard line. This time his team calls their favorite play. And this time, my worst player intercepts the pass in the end zone, and he runs the whole length of the field, over 100 yards, scores the touchdown, wins the championship, and let's say the president declares that football's illegal and there's no more games. Okay. Then what can my friend say? Every time they'd bring up, yeah, but you know, you were on my 1 yard line, then they'd think, oh, wait, I was on your 1 yard line. Yeah, but you called your favorite play. Wait a second. We called our favorite play. Yeah, but our worst player in a set. Wait, hold on a second. Your worst player. You see, each and every one of those little trophies that he accomplished in his game is taken away by my game. And therefore, he has nothing to say. His defeat is total and complete. Okay? So in our redemption, Christ could have parachuted to earth. He could have died on the cross. And that would be like winning 128 to nothing, right? Blow him off the field. Because Christ's merits is infinite, right? But God wants to redeem us most perfectly and completely despoil the devil of all those little victories, all those things that we were ashamed of in the fall. And I got this idea from St. Augustine. Augustine wrote this, quote, "The purpose is this, that the devil might be defeated and punished by both natures, that is, male and female, because he was exultant about the victory over both. And he would have been insufficiently punished." Get that? He would be insufficiently punished if both sexes in us would have been not liberated, but that not through both sexes. In other words, if it was just Adam who liberates, we would still have all those trophies that he won against the woman. So how does God perfectly, completely redeem us? How does he completely despoil the serpent of all these little victories in the fall? Well, the early church saw that God does the same thing, but in reverse. Just like that football game we talked about, right? So just as a serpent approached the woman, an unfallen angel, Gabriel, approaches a betrothed, sinless virgin. Okay? Victory number one. Cross that off your list. The serpent tells the lie. Well, Angel Gabriel tells the truth to Mary. Cross that victory off the list. The woman believes the lie, and she falls, right? Well, Mary, the new Eve, believes the good news. Let it be, behold, I am the handmaid of the Lord. Let it be done to me according to your word. So cross that victory off the list. Okay. The woman changes alliances and becomes friends with the devil and at enmity with God. Well, Mary, who is a sinless betrothed virgin, just like Eve was, remained faithful. And so that's when Gabriel, when he approaches her, calls her full of grace. She is already in fellowship with God. Okay, so she doesn't change. She doesn't change alliances. Now, what about cooperation? We said that the woman was the co-peccatrix. She, by her cooperation with the devil, she became his instrument that laid the circumstances for Adam's fall. Well, guess what? With Mary, she cooperates with God's plan from beginning to end, and she becomes his instrument to lay the circumstances for our redemption. Right? Because she gives Christ our flesh, human flesh, so that he may offer it for our redemption. Just like Eve was in Latin called the co-peccatrix, she's with the sinner. Mary is called co-redemptrix or co-reparatrix because she's with the Redeemer or she's with the Repairer. Okay. Beautiful stuff, right? There's tons of early church fathers. I'm looking here. Eve summed up in Mary that the virgin should be the virgin's intercessor and that by the virgin's obedience, undo and put away the disobedience of a virgin. Another quote is, "In the beginning, the serpent, having captivated the ears of Eve, spread poison into the whole body. Today, Mary receives by means of the ears the advocate of perpetual happiness." So, who has the instrument of death is also the instrument of life. Cross that victory off the list, okay? Then, of course, you have Adam who disobeys. He becomes the peccator, the sinner. And through his sin alone, original sin and the fall is accomplished. We have the new Adam, Jesus Christ, the Redemptor, okay, who through his obedience on the cross wins redemption, and through his sacrifice alone accomplishes it, just like Adam's sacrifice. Beautiful, okay? So you can see how it's a matter of justice that the one and the other happens. It's not just a coincidence. But what about the consequences of the fall? Okay, well, what about those curses? Adam was cursed because he was cursed to have labor to bring forth fruit, and also the woman to labor, you know, labor pains to produce children. Well, guess what? Jesus gives us the food that never perishes. He says, don't work for the food that perishes, but for the food that endures for eternal life that the Son of Man will give you in John 6. And Mary also gives birth to Christ painlessly in Bethlehem. You can see that prophesied in Isaiah 66. How about the loss of immortality? Okay. Adam is restored to the true paradise where the tree of life resides. So Christ ascends to heaven, which is the true paradise of God where the tree of life resides. If you don't believe me, look in Revelation 2, verse 7, and also 22, verse 2. Heaven is the true paradise. So just as Adam was exiled from paradise and loses immortality, the new Adam ascends to the true paradise in heaven where the tree of life resides, right, and remains immortal. But remember, Adam wasn't alone exiled. He was also took with him the woman. And guess what, ladies and gentlemen? How is that accomplished? Revelation 12:1, the woman is taken to heaven just like Eve was taken into exile. The woman is taken into the true paradise. She returns back to paradise. If Mary's not assumed, guess what? That victory of the devil still kind of remains over our head. And then finally, dominion. With Adam and Eve, they spread dominion through physical propagation. How is it in the new covenant with the redemption? Sanctifying grace is spread through a rebirth, a second birth by baptism. So that being reborn of water and spirit, we are filled with the Holy Spirit. We do God's law, and we do God's law so that God's will on earth will be done as it is in heaven, right? So that's accomplished there. So each one of those victories, step by step, is taken away and transformed into the very trophies of our redemption, okay? And that, ladies and gentlemen, is why the devil hates Mary. Okay, that's the windup. But anyway, the other windup is this. If your theology doesn't have Mary in it, then guess what? God's plan of redemption is somehow not sufficient. Well, hey, we got a great show coming up next week. We're going to have William Albrecht come back to the dojo. Troy Guy, Dr. Doug Beaumont, and also Dr. Edward Fazer coming in at the end of the week. It's going to be an awesome week next week. Please come and join us. And talk about awesome. Our next program, The Terry and Jesse Show. High impact Catholic talk coming at you. And I hope you enjoyed the program. I love talking about Mary. So anyway, it's time for me to turn off the dojo lights here and shut down the Midwest Command Center. We'll be here doing apologetics next week. Please come join us. And as always, I hope that all of you have a wonderful and blessed day. And thank you so much for listening to the program. God bless everybody. Bye-bye.
In the 1990s, I lived and worked in Hollywood. But when my wife Betty's mom took ill, we relocated to Orange County. And it was during this time in our lives that I converted to Catholicism. Once my eyes were opened to the truth, I couldn't learn enough about the faith. But I had less free time than ever, especially with a long commute. That's when I discovered the real value of Catholic audio. Listening to cassette tapes transformed my daily commute into a miniature retreat. And that's the beauty of Virgin Most Powerful Radio today. Since the podcasts are archived, you can listen anytime on our smartphone app. I know how listening to Catholic audio can bring you closer to Christ and His Church. So I encourage you to visit the App Store or go to vmpr.org and download the app today. It just might change your life. I'm Matthew Arnold for Virgin Most Powerful Radio.
Virgin Most Powerful Radio, sharing the gospel with clarity and charity.